It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. If you are just joining us, we just heard an interview recorded earlier with WESA News Director Mark Neutbar and Pittsburgh Police Chief Cameron McLay reflecting on his first year on the job. I'm joined now in studio by University of Pittsburgh Law Professor David Harris to talk about what we've heard, as well as things like the Ferguson effect and the Freddie Gray case. David Harris, good to have you back with us.
Always good to be with you, Paul. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. If you want to join the conversation, we are going to be with David up until the top of the hour, and the time is going to go by quicker than we would like. But if you have a comment or question, 412-246-2002 is the number to call to join the conversation and be on the air with us. Again, the number 412-246-2002. All right, David, the chief said that overall he had three goals coming in: becoming a data-driven operation, to improve relations between police and communities, and to improve morale inside the department. So what's your assessment of how he's done with, first, the data-driven operation?
Well, this is important. It's all kind of infrastructure. It's not something we would see on the street. But the chief is right that it's important to have policing driven not by what people think or hunches, but by the data you have in every respect. We have, and the chief mentioned, he's got partners here in Pittsburgh, people at Carnegie Mellon, people in the city and county government who are very adept with this kind of data analytics operation. And I know he's getting help with this. So I think he's well on the road to pulling that together. We have not had that kind of data operation before here in the police department.
So really, it's modernizing the police department here.
It's modernizing, but it's more than that. It isn't simply a matter of, say, new equipment. This is a way of looking at the world as much as it's anything else, and they're going to take what is usually called big data, and they're going to use it to their advantage so that they can become what he called a predictive policing department, the ability to deploy their forces, their assets, and their initiatives in a way that they anticipate will help them address problems even before they arise.
Which is a trend in all businesses, all
Absolutely
sorts of organizations now. And that's what I meant by modernizing, is that it is his way of capitalizing on the way people are using data now, analytics,
yes,
as the way to best deploy your resources, which are, as we heard, you know, everybody has a wish list and things are somewhat limited. Now, relations between police and our communities, particularly our African-American communities, another area that Chief McLay wanted to focus on. Of course, it was a year ago that in the building right next to where, or the part of the building right next to where we're sitting, we had the conference, a live Essential Pittsburgh show and a community conversation, a community forum, looking at police-community relations in Pittsburgh. So it's been a year. We certainly knew what the problems were then. We know what they are now. Are they being addressed?
I believe they are. I have seldom witnessed somebody who comes into a new city and makes such consistent, positive efforts to reach out the way that Chief McLay has. He has connected with almost every Black leader in town that I can think of. Everybody in the faith community, people in the activist community, people in established organizations. And as a result, he's really built up a kind of a base of support for himself. And I think that people who have met him, who have had these talks with him, who have been in forums and public meetings in which he has communicated with them honestly and from his heart, those people have come across as very impressed, have become very impressed with him, and they have honestly become fans. So I think he's off to a great start there. What is the what will really be important to watch in his second year is how that kind of communication translates down to the street level. Because what we want to see, of course, is for this to not just be an effort by the chief, but for it to be an attitude that permeates the department. And I think we're beginning to see that. I mean, I can remember opening the paper not long ago and seeing here's a protest in town against homicides and violence in the community. And there were police officers in the picture I saw, but they were not standing on the sidelines. They were part of the protests themselves. They were taking part in supporting it. And that kind of initiative, I think, is new. And that took place. I asked the chief about it. He said, well, that I didn't tell them to do that. They did that on their own. And I think that's the question. Will we see that? Will the daily interactions be improved?
What about morale within the police ranks?
Well, this is crucial. I mean, one of the things that I think put the chief ahead of a lot of other new chiefs was that he understood from the get-go that you can't have a police force that treats the community well if the police force itself is not treated well by its own command staff. And I think there was a long-standing problem within the police department. Police officers did not feel they were treated fairly. They did not feel that discipline was meted out in ways that were predictable and fair and so forth. And so if you don't have equity inside, you don't get equity outside. And the chief came in with a basic understanding of that, and he has worked, I know, very hard with the FOP, with the rank and file, to improve those relations. It's one of those things we'll want to come back and see in a year just how that seems and how that feels. But the people I talk to are feeling an improved atmosphere. They want to see proof, but they know that they're headed in the right direction.
412-246-2002, the number to call. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, my guest David Harris, and we're talking about comments by Pittsburgh Police Chief Cameron McLay in an interview that we ran earlier in the program, an interview that was recently recorded. Let's welcome in Joseph on the South Side, joining us by phone. Joseph, you're on Essential Pittsburgh with David Harris. Hi.
Yes, sir. I heard that the two classes of new police officers that are being fielded are fielded without any black males being a part of those classes. How is that even possible?
That's a great question. I don't have the numbers on that, so I can't tell you whether that is in fact true or not. What I could almost predict myself is that there wouldn't be a lot of black academy people in either of those classes, because this has been a long-term problem here in Pittsburgh.
The police commissioner, Mr. McLay, talked about that in the interview. He said that the recruits that are coming in, there's not as much diversity as he would like to see, and that the diversity in the ranks is among the older members of the force.
Absolutely. And so we're not where we want to be. That is absolutely clear to everybody. And I've never been to a public meeting in which anybody was satisfied, not from any perspective, not the police perspective, the citizens' perspective, with where we are diversity-wise on the police department. I do know that recently, within the last 6 months, the city has settled a long-running lawsuit on police recruiting and racial discrimination in police recruiting. So I expect things to improve. I just don't know that we are there yet. And like the police said, like the chief said in the interview, you have to look at this from multiple perspectives. It's not just what the structure of the police department will accept. It's who wants to be part of this organization when it has the history it does. And I think when that begins to improve, when relations begin to improve between a police department and African-American communities, we'll get more potential recruits. We'll be able to improve this in the long run. But this is a long-term problem. It's going to require a focus for a long, long time.
One of the comments that jumped out at me, and I'm interested to hear what your reaction is, David, concerned Cameron McLay's comments about the Obama administration's national initiative to improve trust and justice. Is the chief correct that the national initiative is not a mandate, like the consent decree?
Yes, he is correct about that. The national initiative is something that any police department in the United States could apply to be part of. And then the national initiative was to select 6 pilot sites for specialized training in implicit bias, procedural justice, and efforts in racial reconciliation. The chief is a very forward-looking guy, and he applied on behalf of his police department, and we in Pittsburgh and the police department were selected as one of the 6 national pilot test sites. Nobody has to do this. It's not a mandate. They don't have to do anything that the national initiative says they should do. What it does is supply training in procedural justice and implicit bias problems by the best people out there in the field. They will come to Pittsburgh. They will tailor the training to Pittsburgh. They will undertake it, and it will be paid for. And this is not the kind of training that the city or the police department itself could afford. They will also be doing community and inside the department survey work so that the chief gets a very good idea and the city gets a good idea of what the attitudes, feelings about the police department are, and that will tell them if they're making progress in the years ahead.
Another thing that jumped out at me, perception in many ways is reality, and it just seems like this is such a violent year in Pittsburgh. We just keep hearing about these shootings, senseless shootings occurring particularly in minority neighborhoods in the city of Pittsburgh. The chief said this is an average year, that the homicide rate is actually down, which it may well be, but there is still plenty of reason for concern among average citizens. We have Don in Homewood on the line who has a question that relates to this. Don, you're on Essential Pittsburgh. Hi.
Yeah, my question is, there's a lot of personal, a lot of things going on for the police chief, but there is no solution to the homicide rate being committed by people with no education, and you have all these trained cops that can't solve these homicides. I have too many friends and relatives with unsolved homicides that live in my community, and there's nothing being done. There's no progress. There's no statements about that, and that's my question.
Well, and it's a good question, and Don, you are referring to a problem that I think might be rooted in communication and that issue of trust in the community. Are these residents, when you talk about these unsolved crimes, are the police need cooperation from the people in these neighborhoods? A lot of people know in many of these cases what happened and are afraid to talk about it. Is that the problem we're talking about here?
I think that's part of it, Paul, certainly, but there's more to it than that. And one of the things that I know that the police department is beginning to undertake and really put in place in a big, big way is what's called focused deterrence. That's what the police chief was talking about in his interview as well. I'm really sympathetic to Don and to all the communities out there that are suffering from violence. We make too little progress in too few cases. But what focused deterrence is, and what it does, is it puts the police focus on the right people, because most of our homicides in Pittsburgh are in particular neighborhoods, often poor neighborhoods, and they are sometimes often drug and gang related. And when there's one homicide, there tends to be a retaliation. And both people involved in the homicide, the victim and the shooter, they could easily have changed places. This is what we've learned from years of research. So we focus on the right people through our data analytics and through other information. We can actually stop the cycles of retaliation and bring things under control. And this has been tried and succeeded in some other areas of the country. That's what they're going to be bringing online very, very soon here.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. We need to take a break. Our guest, University of Pittsburgh Law Professor David Harris, and we will get to your calls and as many of your comments as we can when we continue on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest, University of Pittsburgh Law Professor David Harris, as we continue talking about police issues and issues that relate to our communities here in Pittsburgh. And David, the interview that we ran earlier with Police Chief Cameron McLay included a reference by the chief that violence is up elsewhere since Ferguson. Others have been implying a link between that violence and Ferguson. Some have called this the Ferguson effect. What is the Ferguson effect, and what is the real story, and do police officers feel under siege?
Well, the Ferguson effect, as that phrase has been used, is simply this. First, that crime and violence is way, way up, especially in some cities. Murder is going through the roof, and murder of police officers is up, and that the most plausible explanation for that is the agitation and protest against police departments, either by Black Lives Matter or other organizations or activists in general. This protest is causing police officers and departments to kind of back off their enforcement efforts, and criminals are empowered, and therefore they're just there's mayhem everywhere. I've heard this numerous times. I'm sure many of your listeners have. Here's the real deal with this. Number one, there is no new nationwide crime wave that is happening. That's just simply not true. The data don't bear it out. There are some cities in the country, Milwaukee comes to mind, that are undergoing a real spike in violent crime and homicides. Baltimore, too. But they are not keyed in any way that anybody can see to anything going on with the police department or with police reaction to protests. The other thing is, in many cities, crime is steady, violent crime is steady, and in some respects, even going down. Murders of police officers, deaths of police officers are up this year. Murders are actually down. More police officers are dying in traffic accidents, it turns out, than at any time in recent memory. So there is no new crime wave. And to say that police officers, all the good officers out there, would be failing to do their jobs because some people are protesting against them, I think that's very offensive to the good police officers. So I see nothing to this Ferguson effect. It's simply a way to blame the protesters for whatever other problems are out there.
James from Brownsville, we're very tight on time. Be as quick as you can, please.
Yeah, Professor Harris, all I wanted to know, did you get a chance to look at the Ferguson report that was released, I guess, yesterday? I saw it on public television, and the way the sociology professor was saying, like, there's nothing really new there.
Let's let David respond, because we're almost out of time, James.
I have not read the full report, James, but I have reviewed the recommendations. A lot of it does resemble what came out in the President's Commission report. There are many recommendations there that are local and therefore different, but most of it tracks the recommendations that are already out there, and it'll be up to the Missouri legislature to see if it actually does anything now. It really hasn't in the past year that it's had to react to the events in Ferguson.
In the less than minute we have left, the Freddie Gray case is something that we ought to get to. The city of Baltimore settled civil charges with Freddie Gray's family last week. They did this before any case was even filed and at a much earlier stage in the process than is usual. Why? And could this impact the criminal trial?
It could impact the criminal trial. We've already seen the defense lawyers arguing that the settlement makes it too difficult to select a fair jury. The judge turned them down. Why did Baltimore do this? Well, you have to keep in mind the city settled the civil suit, actually, even before it was filed. The prosecutor carries forward the criminal case. So these are completely different entities. The city wants to get this behind it as soon as possible to begin moving forward with better relations. They can't really do that if they have a civil suit they're litigating.
And the judge has decided that the defendants will all be tried separately in 30 seconds. Why did he decide to do this? Wouldn't it make sense to try them all together since all the defendants are involved in the same set of facts?
Well, the default position is everybody in the same set of facts is tried together. But then if you have a reasonable argument that people have antagonistic defenses, the trials are severed. That's what the judge did. He took them apart so everybody can have a fair trial.
Pitt Law Professor David Harris, we're out of time. Thank you.
My pleasure, Paul.
Tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, an interview with Robert Morris University's new president, Christopher Howard. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.